The following episode of Why We Cook has been brought to you by the Museum of Food and Drink. The Museum of Food and Drink will be holding a Get the Ball Rolling fundraiser this Sunday, March 27th at Del Posto. For more information, visit www.mofad.org. That's www.mofad.org.
Listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Welcome to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host, and this is episode 80 of Why We Cook. 80! It's amazing.
Congratulations.
Oh, thanks, Jack. Well, it's like the voice of God. Just Jack. Godlike. Yeah, 80. I'm very proud of that. So I think that we can all agree as human beings that there are some things on this planet that smell really bad. We can all agree. Things smell bad, like, oh, dog poop, or vomit, or homeless guys, or any of Elizabeth Taylor's perfumes. I think we are all pretty unanimously in agreement that those smell bad. Smells that everybody would agree as upon as bad. And at least those of us living in Western culture, it's a general consensus among us that those are bad smells. Not necessarily universally, only in the West. All people have smells they don't like. It's part of human nature. It's inherent. You learn at a very young age to avoid bad smelling things. It's your first sense that you use, really. But perceptions of good and bad smells actually vary from culture to culture. So that's why, you know, a cleaning product that's sold here in the U.S. will actually be scented differently when it's for sale in Japan or for sale in France, because different cultures have different concepts of what things should smell like, or what clean smells like, or, you know, what fruity should smell like. And so the companies that make scented and flavored things tailor them to who they're going to be selling it to their audience. And then there are some things that smell bad but also good at the same time, sort of like, you know, how you look at it. Like, remember that Seinfeld where Jerry was dating that woman who in some light she was really beautiful, but then in other light she was really unattractive? It's sort of like that. Like Parmesan cheese, Parmigiano Reggiano, can sometimes smell really delicious and really good often. But sometimes, don't you think it smells a little bit like puke? You know, the flavor is there. The flavor is full of richness and umami and dairy deliciousness, you know. You know, umami is the fifth flavor, the fifth taste that we can perceive. It's like rich, meaty savoriness. And, you know, just a little bit of Parmesan shaved on something can really make it pop. But sometimes when you smell it, I think it smells a little bit like puke. And yet we love it and we eat it on everything. It's like that, you know, we can just shift the perception enough that it smells good. And I love it, but sometimes not so much. And, you know, often, classically, you would, of course, put it over tomato-y dishes, like tomato sauce-based dishes. And you put those two together, and that's like a perfect marriage of umami, because cooked tomatoes are high in it, and Parmesan cheese is high in it, and you have the acid and the dairy, and they marry really well. But it can also be very reminiscent of stomach flu as a child, because there's something in cooked tomatoes to me that are also like stomach acid smell. I'm sorry if anyone's getting nauseous, but this is what I've been thinking about lately. And so you'd have to wonder really why we'd put those two together, because they can be really delicious or great, or, you know, you sort of look at it from a slightly different angle and it's not so good. And also Hershey bars. I know, who eats Hershey bars, right? We all eat really good chocolate now. Artisan, good, single origin, bean, 90% cacao, blah, blah, blah. But your basic Hershey bar has that too. It can be kind of creamy, chocolatey, you know, in a like cheap way, deliciousness. But then there's also like a puke note to that. Somebody actually once said that to me, that their father couldn't eat Hershey bars because they tasted too much like vomit to him. And you know that, like, the there are thousands and thousands of flavor and fragrance molecules out there that make up everything we smell and everything we eat. And it's all just a matter of combining them to come up with, you know, with these things that we find really delicious or really repulsive. And you have to wonder, is like the difference between pukey or parm just a matter of a couple of molecules, like just a few tweaks? And that it's like the difference between plastics and fats. They're only one molecule different, plastic and fat. Just one little molecule tweaked in a lab somewhere. Or what about something like durian? You know durian? Durian's a fruit that grows in Southeast Asia. It's a, like a big, huge, spiky-looking thing. It's similar-looking to something called jackfruit, but jackfruit doesn't have the stench. Durian is this fruit that people in Southeast Asia love. They go crazy for it. When it's in season, they eat it in everything, and then they make all these durian products, ice cream and juices and candy, and they use it like crazy and freeze it. But people here, Westerners, we think it smells like a combination of garbage and cat pee. That's what I think it smells like. So what is it that makes some people in the world just relish that and love it and can't get enough? And some of us find it completely offensive. Well, I mean, it's acculturation. First of all, you grow up eating something your whole life and you like it. But it's also culture in that we have different ideas about what should smell good and what shouldn't smell bad. There's a great book called The Emperor of Scent by a guy named Chandler Burr, and he's a perfume writer. And he was talking about this sort of thing in his book, and he said that, talking about the French, he said the French like their smells slightly fecal. They don't want it to actually smell like shit. They just want the hint of it in their perfume. He should know. He's the authority on perfume. But, you know, then there are other foods, too, like Marmite, Vegemite, that stuff that people who grow up in Australia, New Zealand, even in Britain, they like that stuff. And to me, it tastes like tar. Vegemite's like this black tar stuff. It's like a paste. It comes in a little tin or a little jar. And it's a remnant of the brewing process. It's basically like brewer's sludge made from yeast. It's auto-leased yeast. It's like the spent yeast. And apparently it's very nutritious. It's very high in all your B vitamins. And I think they started eating it in those countries during shortages, during wartime. But everyone who grew up there loves it because they've been eating it since birth. In this country, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who loved it. I've tasted it, and it tastes like tar to me. And then the number one of all of these things, I think, that you have to grow up eating it, or maybe there's two. One is something called natto, which is a Japanese food. It's a fermented soy food that they often eat for breakfast in Japan. Not only does it like taste to me like puke and snot, but it looks like it too. Just thinking about it, just actually speaking the word, is my stomach clenched. So we're going to move on from that. But then, so those are the things that it's sort of like East meets West. You know, it's a total cultural thing. But then what about truffles? I mean, I love all mushrooms. You know, I love that kind of fungal mushroomy taste and smell. And truffles are an interesting thing. I mean, some people go really mad for them. You know, it like drives them to insanity, fits of passion incited over truffles. And some people find them repugnant. But the whole, like, mushrooms grow all over the world. Every culture uses them. So that must be sort of just an inherent human thing, whether you find that fungal smell attractive or not. I like black truffles. I like the smell of black truffles, especially when they're paired with some kind of fat, like a truffle butter, because I think that the butter sort of acts as like the carrier for the truffle. It's like the perfect delivery system that total truffly kind of essence can like kind of ride on. And in order to really perceive flavors, which are just smells, you need them with some kind of fat, because the fat kind of helps to like prime your flavor receptors on your tongue. So black truffles are really good, but white truffle oil to me, which granted most of the white truffle oil you buy is actually synthetic. White truffle oil to me smells like a Boy Scout troop came back from a hiking trip and everyone took their boots off. That's what it smells like to me. You have to use white truffle oil very sparingly. And I think a lot of places go crazy with it and put too much on their food. You want to add just like a drop. You use white truffle oil the way that you would use perfume, or the way that people should use perfume, but don't. You want to just leave a few molecules of scent hanging in the air around you, creating a mysterious, seductive cloud. That's what you do with perfume. You want the hint of it. You don't want it to speak its name. It's the same thing, I think, with white truffle oil. So when I'm teaching and we use white truffle oil in class, I tell my students that use just the drop, just enough to give the suggestion of it. You don't have to, you know, give away all the goods. You just hint at it. And the same thing, too, with sesame oil, which isn't necessarily going to be terrible in larger doses, but it works much better in smaller doses because it's so overpowering and it'll knock out everything else. You want it to kind of play along with the other kids harmoniously. You don't want it to, like, fight it out. You should always approach all these scented oils with caution. Remember that less is more. And also, when you're working in a professional kitchen, of course, you can't wear anything on you that's scented, because you want to be smelling food, not you, right? You don't want your coworkers to smell you. You want them to be able to smell what they're cooking. So when I teach, I tell my students that the only thing they're allowed to smell like is clean human. They can't smell like anything else, not even scented laundry products. If I'm trying to evaluate your red wine reduction, for example, and all I'm smelling is April fresh, spring rain, downy softness, I'm not going to be able to get a good impression of your red wine sauce. So we've got a problem right there. So we're going to take a really quick break. When we come back, more about smell.
The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Every Sunday at 3:30 p.m., tune in to We Dig Plants with garden designers Carmen DeVito and Alice Marcus Krieg of Groundworks, Inc. The girls delve into our human relationship with plants as food, medicine, fodder, and a source of beauty and inspiration. They bring the culture to horticulture and discuss such topics as botany how-to, cultivation, horticultural history, garden design trends, and all things generally budding. Again, that's every Sunday at 3:30 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome back to Why We Cook, the Chef's Marty Pants radio show on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host, Chef Smarty Pants. And if you're a fan of this show, why don't you show it? Friend us on Facebook. You can find us on Facebook, Why We Cook, on Heritage Radio Network. Let me know you're listening. Comments, questions, anything. You can also always leave comments on the Heritage Radio Network website. And we do look for them, so keep leaving them, because I love getting them. So I've been thinking a lot about all this smell stuff the past couple days. I like to read books about smell and flavor, but flavor really is smell. Like about the science and the anthropology of smell, how it affects our lives, how it sort of leads us, all of that stuff. And also about like the science and the craft of perfuming and perfumery and of how smells are created. I find that really interesting. And I just started reading another book on it. I've read quite a few. Because as a chef, I think it's important to understand that most of flavor really is just smell. I mean, if you can't smell, you can't taste. And that's quite true, because you ever have a cold where your nose is stuffed up? There's no point in eating. If you couldn't smell at all and you ate, you would only feel the food. You'd get the trigeminal effects, which is things like chili pepper burns or the menthol qualities of something like mint. You wouldn't actually taste anything. The only thing you'd still be able to taste is salt, because salt has no smell, and it's the only flavor that we truly taste only. Pretty interesting, right? So people who lose their sense of smell completely lose their interest in food, too, because they can't taste anything. And there's a way to test this out. It's sort of fun. If you take, you buy a cup, you know, you buy jelly beans. You buy coffee-flavored jelly beans, and you buy, like, a fruity one, like a lemon or a strawberry. You have to get, like, Jelly Belly ones, not like those Easter basket ones. I don't think they make coffee. Oh, you know what? You could use the licorice. Yeah. That's what you could do. Use licorice ones if you like them. Remember a few weeks ago we talked about that. And then you hold your nose really, really tightly and taste them separately. And you won't be able to tell them apart. You won't be able to. You'll get maybe a little bit of a trigeminal from the licorice, but you won't be able to tell it apart. And I know I've done this. I've gone to a couple different seminars on fragrance and flavor, various scientific presentations, and we got to do this at all of them, and we even got these like special clinical nose pinchers to use, like clamps for our noses. They were so cool. I kept mine, took it home. I have it as a souvenir in case there's ever a time where I want to completely clamp my nose shut. You never know. So if you lose your sense of smell, you really lose, like, you lose your bearing in the physical world. Your nose really guides you, and you really lose touch with what it is to be human in the world. There's actually a medical name for it. It's called anosmia or anosmia, when you lose your sense of smell. And people who develop it usually develop it because they've had head trauma, like a car accident, or football players get it because they get bashed in the face too many times. And people who have it generally never recover. Like, once you damage your olfactory bulbs in there, that's it. It's rare that they come back. And if you have it, often, unfortunately, you wind up sinking into deeper and deeper depression and despair, because you start to feel completely disconnected from yourself, from your animal self, and yourself within sort of the greater world. It's really interesting. I was just reading about this today. You remember the band NXS from the 80s? Remember Michael Hutchence from NXS? He hung himself in a hotel room in the early 90s. And, you know, there were all kinds of theories about what went on there. But the reason he wound up killing himself was because he had anosmia that he had gotten when he was riding his bike and was hit by a car, and he had suffered head trauma, and he lost his sense of smell and his sense of taste, and he felt gradually sort of so cut off and so lost from the world. He was apparently very sensual and very hedonistic that he couldn't take it anymore, and he killed himself, which is really sad and really tragic. So, you know, if you give people a survey and you say, what would you rather lose, your sight or your sense of smell? Most people would say your sight, but I actually was thinking about it, and I would give up my sight, my vision, before I would give up my sense of smell, I think. Because at least with a nose, you could still navigate your way through the world, and you could smell, and you could taste, and you could sort of tell that you were an animal living amongst other animals. And the opposite of anosmia is something called hyperosmia, or hyperosmia, which means you smell things too intensely. And sometimes I feel like I have that. Like, I can smell, you know, if someone's a smoker and they're like three rooms away, I can smell the smoke on them. Or if one of my students, you know, uses Axe body spray, I can smell that on them across the room. We used to have a maintenance guy at work who wore a ton of aftershave. It was sickening. And I teach on the 14th floor, and he worked down in maintenance on 4. And if he got in the elevator on 4 and started coming up, I could smell it on 14 because the smell came up the elevator shaft and down the hall, and I could smell it, and I knew he was coming. Sometimes I feel like a dog, and I sort of sniff my way around the kitchen trying to sniff out, you know, who got away with wearing something scented. Now, I mean, I'm just making a joke. I'm sure I don't have it because it's actually a medical condition, hyperosmia, but sometimes it seems like it, especially with people who wear perfume or too much perfume. Although, ironically, or not. One of my favorite books is actually the book Perfume by Patrick Zuskind, German guy. Perfume is a fascinating, fascinating book. It's, if you've never read it and you're at all interested in food, flavor, taste, anything, you should read it. Really interesting. The main character in the book is this guy named Grenouille, which means frog. And he has hyperosmia. He has an intense ability to smell. But he's also born with no personal smell at all. He gives off, his body gives off no smell. He's scentless. And he's incredibly perceptive at tracking and identifying scents and sort of uses that to his twisted advantage in the book. But sort of the secondary thing going on in the book is that it's this fascinating look at the history of perfuming and how scents are captured and trapped using different methods, using fats and oils and waxes and using alcohol, depending on if the fragrance molecule is fat soluble or alcohol soluble. That part of it is really interesting. And there's like a murder mystery thrown in there too. So, you know, it's got something for everyone. I highly recommend it. And I was looking it up today because I couldn't remember the name of the author. And it turned out that I found out this little tidbit that Kurt Cobain also said that Perfume was one of his favorite books of all time. And if you remember the Nirvana album In Utero, there's a song called Scentless Apprentice, and it's all about Grenouille. That's where it came from. Of course, I never even knew what the words were to that song because I couldn't understand what he was saying. I guess I could have read the liner notes, but turns out that's what it's about. So Kurt Cobain and I had something in common other than living in the 90s. And the funny thing about all that is that even though I'm really interested in the science of all of it and the craft of perfumery, and I like reading these articles and books by scent writers, smelling most perfume actually makes me physically ill to the point where it actually gives me a migraine. But I love the art and the craft of it all. I've often said that if I were in a field where I could wear something scented, what I would probably do is take like basil leaves and like orange peel and rub those all over my skin, because that's what I would want to smell like. But if I had known, like growing up, if someone had said to me, you know, you can actually work when you're an adult as a professional nose creating scents, or even better, as a professional flavorist, I might have paid a little bit more attention in chemistry in high school if I had known that was an option. I didn't know back then it was an option. Now I'm too old, because you have to have a degree, advanced degree in chemistry, and you have to memorize 5,000 chemical compounds. Who can do that? Only someone who's like 19 has a brain that can do that. But I would have done it if someone had told me I could do it. All right, we're going to take another very quick break. When we come back, more smelling. Welcome back to Why We Cook, the Chef's Marty Pants radio show on Heritage Radio Network. Oh, there it is, the scream. What is he saying there? Is it just me? Jack, do you understand the lyrics to that song?
I think that scream is go away.
Oh.
That's how I understood it.
Yeah. I never knew. I don't think I ever listened that closely, though. So we're talking about smell. Things that maybe smell good to you, but not to someone else, or foods that smell good but yet can also smell really bad. I used Parmesan cheese as the example early on in the show as something that often smells really good, but sometimes I think it smells a little bit like puke. am I alone in this? This is something where I would really like some comments from my listeners. I would like to know if I'm the only one. I don't think so. And then, so, you know, thinking about foods that potentially smell really bad, there's also foods that smell bad at first, but then you cook them and they get so much better. And the prime example of that, I think, is fish sauce. Because fish sauce, when you first open the bottle, smells horrible. But as soon as you use it, the smell goes away. It like immediately dissipates, especially if you mix it into a sauce like Nuoc Cham or Nam Pla, which are the Thai and Vietnamese versions of fish sauce mixed with lime juice and sugar, which you put on everything. But, you know, Westerners, like in general, are very often freaked out and turned off by fish sauce, like just hate it. But then if you say, well, if you like Thai food, you're eating quarts of fish sauce, but they won't like keep a bottle of it. Like I used to, you know, teach my ladies in Greenwich, and they were all a little about smells in their $20 million houses. And a couple times they were like, let's do Thai food. And I would bring the fish sauce with me, and they'd all go, and run out of the room. And if you think fish sauce is bad, you should smell shrimp paste. Shrimp paste is like the aggressive bullying cousin from Cambodia. It's like fish sauce with all the water removed and just the sludge left behind. That's shrimp paste. And that's used a lot in Thai cooking too, but they use it a lot in Cambodia. If you've ever been to Cambodia, I find that the entire country just smells like shrimp paste. It's like fish sauce on steroids. If the steroids and you were locked in the basement with the cats from the durian, sort of what it's like. But to me, it's the perfect example of a food that smells bad when it's solo, but then tastes and smells really good when you mix it with other ingredients. And the reason it smells bad is because it's rotten fish. That's what it is. It's anchovies that have been salted and fermented in a barrel until they rot, and then all the liquid is drained off. So that's what fish sauce is, but it also is a super duper umami food. Anchovies are off the charts in umami, and when you factor in the salt, that makes that even more of a powerful umami flavor. And people who turn up their nose at fish sauce have no problem eating Worcestershire sauce. And Worcestershire sauce is basically the same thing with fruit added. So if you ever look at the ingredients in a bottle of Worcestershire, it's made out of anchovies, people. Tell that to your vegan friends next time they order a Bloody Mary. You can freak them out with that one. Worcestershire is made from things like anchovies and tamarind, which is also a fruit from Southeast Asia. And I'm sure lots of other junk now, but originally it was made out of fruit and fish. Fruit and fish fermented, same idea. And it sort of serves the same purpose. Worcestershire also is very high in umami. And you just, you know, you add a few drops and it kind of brings up the profile of all the other flavors. Sort of a chemical flavor enhancer. The same way that salt does that to a lot of foods. And if you like using fish sauce, you should seek out better brands of fish sauce. I personally like the Vietnamese brands better, but the Thai brands are also really good. The Thai ones are a little bit lighter in color and a little bit more delicate. But if you're when you're shopping for them, look for the word ni, N-H-I, ni. Ni. Ni means like first pressing. It's sort of the fish sauce equivalent of extra virgin. Yeah, there you go. So years ago, I was asked to teach some Thai cooking classes at the JCC, the Jewish Community Center, which meant kosher Thai classes. And guess what? There's no kosher fish sauce on the market. I have not yet found one. If someone has found one, let me know. But we had to do all this Thai cooking, subbing soy sauce for fish sauce, and it just wasn't the same. I'm sorry, but it just wasn't the same. So, oh my God, we're just about out of time. What I was going to talk about there for a second, I can get to it, is that if you really want to smell something bad, go to a market in Vietnam on a 98-degree day in the summer and walk really deep into the heart of it. That'll get your stomach clenching. You'll kind of get this commingling effect of fish sauce and freshly killed rotting animals and moldy rotten vegetables on the floor and maybe low tide and what else? shrimp paste and mud and sweaty bodies all kind of mixed in there in that 98 degree weather. But then you go a little bit deeper into that market stall and there'll be all these food vendors selling amazingly fresh, delicious, flavorful food. And you sit down and you eat that bowl of soup or whatever it is you're eating, and all that bad smell just goes away. We are out of time, people. Thanks for listening. I hope I didn't make anybody too queasy. What?
The lyrics to Scentless Apprentice.
Oh, and?
Like most babies smell like butter, his smell smelled like no other. He was born scentless and senseless. He was born a scentless apprentice.
There you go. Grenouille, the scentless apprentice. Read the book. You'll learn a lot. All right. See you next week. We're out of time. Good night.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following is a public service announcement from Beer Sessions Radio. Beyond the human and environmental casualties of the triple threat disaster in Japan, there will likely also be losses to our collective food culture, from miso and sake makers to outstanding fisheries. With help from the New York State Brewers Association, the Good Beer Seal, Beer Sessions Radio, and craft breweries alike, Jimmy Carboni is hoping to raise funds that will go directly to Hitachino, an excellent Japanese brewery, through a benefit at Brooklyn Brewery next Monday, March 28th from 7 to 10 p.m. In addition to beer, there'll be food from the Meat Hook, Jimmy's No. 43, Waterfront Ale House, and a few local Japanese restaurants. All money raised will go to Kyuchi Brewery and Hitachino Beers, which they will distribute via humanitarian aid locally. To date, the brewery, which lost 500 bottles in the earthquake and suffered some damage to its physical plant, is filtering and bottling water for its community and providing them with food. You can read a letter about the quake's aftermath to Jimmy from Toshiyuki Kyuchi, the brewery owner, on his site. And you can buy tickets to the benefit on brownpapertickets.com/event/166978. That's brownpapertickets.com/event/166978.